More About Co-Housing with Lynn Morstead and Kelly Soika. Co-Housing Houston is a multi-generational, community-minded group of people who share the values of connection and sustainability. We're developing the first co-housing project in Texas, and we're really glad you found us today.
Hi, Kelly. Yes.
Hi. How are you today? We have an exciting guest. I'm very, very happy to report that we have, well, Lynn, I'm going to let you do the intro because you were the person who found our guest.
You found our speaking engagement today. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
So I would like to introduce Susan Lieberman, who does not live in Houston anymore. She has moved to the West Coast, but I learned about her in a writing class, a memoir class that I'm involved in Houston. And everybody was all abuzz a couple of weeks ago because they had had a visit with Susan Lieberman. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about this amazing group that she had formed in Houston many years ago, but then sadly she left town. The group dissolved. They all still miss her. She is this fireball of building community. And they were all talking about how she had moved to the West Coast and had started building an intergenerational community. And so I thought, I need to meet this person. We would like to talk to her. She seems to be all about community. We're generating community here that we're going to move into. But Susan seems to have this kind of fire that burns inside her, that wherever she shows up, she builds community. And it doesn't seem to matter where it is or what life stage she's at, she is making it happen. So a mutual friend of ours, after much pestering, remembered to introduce us via email. And it took Susan about 30 seconds to reply to the email mm-hmm. that I sent her. So I thought, already, this is a sign of the energy that I had heard about. So, Susan, we just want to thank you so much for being on this and being willing to join our conversation here today to talk to us about community. So, introducing Susan Lieberman.
I'm flattered and delighted to be with you. And I do like community because it gets lonely without it.
Yeah, that's what we feel like.
Right? Yeah, indeed. Well, Susan, since I didn't have the benefit of hearing about you from all of your many fans in Houston before Lynn brought you here, I was wondering if you could share with us kind of what's your background with community? How has it shown up for you in your life? Is there kind of a through line of different types of community for you?
You know, I am married to a wonderful man. I've been married to him for 55 years, but he is a deep introvert. He does not randomly bring people into our world. Mm. I'm an extrovert and I need lots of different kinds of people. And I don't want all the same kinds of people. I want people who do things that I don't know how to do, or I've never heard of, or have different backgrounds than I do. So how do you make that happen? You just got to go find them in line at the supermarket.
That's what I do. But yes.
I think what happened in Houston, we were in Houston for 30 years. And for most of those 30 years, I was raising children and being a daughter and being a wife of a department chairman who needed entertainment occasionally and working my own jobs. And then I retired. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, okay, who am I now? Mm-hmm. And who do I talk to? And a friend of mine in another city, I was visiting Philadelphia where I'd lived before Houston. And he said, oh, you should talk to these women in New York who have founded something called the Transition Network. All these women had these really high-powered jobs. And when they retired, they found they had no social life because all of their social life came from work. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, next time I'm in New York, I'll talk to them. And it happened a few months later, I was in New York. And I called up a few of these women and we met for coffee. And I love these women. Mm-hmm. They were smart, bright, and determined that they were going to create a network of like-minded people to help them make the transition from one stage of their life to the next. And they said, it's really working here in New York City and we want it to spread all over the country. Why don't you start a chapter in Houston? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Let me go back and invite a few people to dinner and we'll talk about it. So I went back and I invited a few people to dinner and I said, what do you think about starting this chapter of the Transition Network? They said, well, sure, let's try it. And it turns out there were a lot of other people who were also in transition and wanted to talk about what they were doing and how they were navigating it. And, mm-hmm. After a while, we didn't stay connected to the national organization. They just spun it off into something they called WIT, Women in Transition. And it went for 13 years.
Oh,
it was
wow.
A poor group of women, but women came, women left, women left, came back.
I'm curious, Susan, could you just say a little bit? We didn't talk about this earlier, because this is the business that we're in terms of getting the word out. You know, how did you get the word out in Houston? And draw people in? What was the invitation? How did it look?
That's such a good question. I have the same problem with my books. I'm a good writer. I'm a good organizer. I am a crappy marketer. I have no marketing strategies, you know? I just, what I did was when I, my internal vibration said, this person might be interested. I told them about it. And what I said to everybody else was, when you meet someone that you think you'd like to keep seeing and you think they might be interested, tell them. If you don't like them, don't tell them.
Okay, Kelly, this is our new marketing strategy.
Okay, Lynn, our new marketing. Yeah. If we don't tell you about co-housing, it's because we don't like you. But
we
actually,
don't want
that's
you to
not
move
true.
In
Why would you tell somebody about co-housing if you don't want to have coffee with them, let alone live
this
with
is
them?
True. This is true. This is true. Okay, well, this is good. Well, so tell me a little bit about this Women in Transition, because it sounds to me like that kind of a group is you were coming together to share your life experiences where you were. Did you have kind of some structure to it, or was it just a free-for-all of people talking about, you know, I envision it could go one of two ways. Like everybody's there at the, you know, dinner table and there's a topic and kind of an orderly discussion, or it could just be everybody just comes cocktail party style and chit chats. What did you decide to do? What was effective for you?
Yes, both.
Okay.
Let me just, yes, both. It was over dinner and people would come after work, and we were very lucky. There was a dress store in Houston at the time called Etui, and a woman named Martha Wilder owned it. And she was a very good cook and a very, Etui was her salon. And she invited us to meet in Etui, and she created a sort of a homey feeling. People felt she always had the wine out when we arrived and hors d'oeuvres and food. And so it was agreeable. It was a pleasant place to show up. Let me tell them that I can't talk to them. Hey, I'm sorry. You're recording and I can't do this.
No, you can do
you're
it.
Trying to, somebody's trying to steal you from us, Susan. We're not having that. So she's going to get on the phone and
she
tell
just
them.
Hung up on them. She didn't even tell them about our podcast. So that means sorry.
No, I did. I said, I'm in a Zoom call and I can't talk to you. Clock. I didn't even ask who it was.
I really don't think it's important.
Probably they're just raising money. I doubt that it's a group member with a. Anyway, but we always had a topic, and the topic was in the form of a question.
Oh,
so
okay.
That we could start the conversation. What is it about your children that most aggravates you at this stage of life? Or what is it about your children that gives you the most joy at this stage of life as they're grown-ups? Or one of the most interesting conversations we had was had something about your sex life. People were like, wow, we're really going to talk about that? And then they did. What kept people coming back, I think, was it an opportunity to be in a community where you felt you could be authentically yourself, you could be heard, and you could hear other people. And that met a deep need. It wasn't that we had a mission statement and we were doing good in the world. It's that we were doing good for ourselves and for each other. And that was a family, you know, that was a community. Now, there are other kinds of communities. Sometimes political communities, you're all pulling for a political goal, or you're doing something for children, or, you know, you have a cause. This was not around a cause. And I would say that's true of many of my efforts. The ones now in La Jolla, where I am, are very selfish. They're, what do I need and how can I make it happen?
Well, Susan, tell us a little bit. Yeah, tell us a little bit about that. So you left Houston, you left all these women behind. And then you moved to California, and you, after COVID, you glued another new group together. How did that happen?
So I was in Houston for 30 years, and I had I did a bunch of things, but I was the community affairs person for the Houston City Controller, George Grinius. So I met a lot of people all over Houston. And then I spent 8 years teaching, running a leadership program for undergraduates at Rice. And I placed 70 students in internships every summer. And so I knew a lot of people. And I could make things happen. If I had a question in Houston, I could find somebody who could help me get an answer.
Yeah.
We showed up in San Diego. I didn't know anybody. We'd been in and out of this community for 20 years, but we never really lived here. We just sort of treated it as a vacation house. We slept, refueled, and went back to Texas. So I needed to feel like I lived here. And during COVID, there wasn't anything to do. I wrote a book and sat at my computer, and I came out of COVID and said, what do I need? Well, I shouldn't, that's not exactly right. When I first came here, I looked for groups to join, find the right group. And I found something, a national group was then called Dining for Women. Now it's called Together Women Rise. I liked this group because they do good work. They raise money to make grants to empower women and children in third world countries. And that was impressive. I liked the women who founded it because they began small and they got impassioned and they were unpretentious. And I thought this would be good. I could do good for other people, and I could do good for me too. Yeah. Let's see if we can start an intergenerational group. And I asked a friend of mine to start it with me. And we were very lucky. After the first organizational meeting, this young woman moved here from Washington, D.C. She was 25. She'd been very active in her group there. And she said to the national office, I want to start an intergenerational group in San Diego. And they said, ah,
perfect.
It was perfect. We got started and COVID came and we floundered for 2.5 years. And then we had to try and restart it. And I would say that now, after a year, we just now have enough glue that I think there's a cohesiveness that, there's a core of people who show up and it works. And we all love it because it's very hard to go to dinner with a 25-year-old and an 82-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's great.
Susan, I wonder if there are some things that you did with your group in Houston that kept that so lively for so many years that you're now applying to your group in California. If there's any kind of things that you just found work so well, that you've kind of imported, if you will, from your other experience.
You asked me outside of this conversation about sort of best practices, and I don't know that I can be formal, but I'll tell you a couple things I believe. Food always helps. Wine, good food, always helps bring people together. And clear communication. I'm always surprised that how vague people are about who, what, where, when, and what time. And that doesn't seem very hard, but somehow it doesn't happen.
It's kind of some of the basics, right? It's kind of your license to operate is you've got to get those things.
I think maybe there are two other things. Always saying thank you, making people feel appreciated for whatever effort they do, making Elmatha feel like she was so important to the organization as she was for offering her shop. That was just fact. And I, and you said people talk about how effective I am. I think there's this odd combination that I've, I don't know, landed on, developed. I'm not afraid to be a leader, but I don't ever want to be a boss. Yeah. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Totally. Yes.
I want to give shape to the organization. I want to give it direction, but I don't want anybody to feel like I'm making the rules. So I like to hide.
Nice.
And sort of not, like people say, oh, you're the leader of this group in Houston. I say, oh, no, I'm not the leader. I'm the glue. And it's true. The group doesn't work without all the participants, but it needs somebody to send out the announcements. And I'm not a big believer in rules. I know you have to have, especially if you're collecting money,
Well, but yeah, legally, like in some instances, you
People
know.
get sensitive about that for some reason. Yeah.
So I would never, I refused for us to become a 501c3 because I want to file the paperwork. I said, if you want to be part of this organization, it's $50 a year, and you have to trust me that I'm not going to embezzle your money. Period. And I did. I mean, I set up a set and I didn't, you know. And here are the rules. Tell the truth, be kind, say thank you, do what you say you're going to do. And if you don't do it, clean up the mess. If you say you're going to show up, please show up, but never feel obligated. If you have something else to do, just tell us. You know? And if you like it, keep coming. And if you don't like it, go away. And don't feel you have to apologize. So, you know, when people came and then they left, it wasn't personal. Better to do. Bravo.
Right. Yeah, maybe that's part of the magic of the group too, is it's easy to join and it's easy to leave because
Yeah.
sometimes the stickiness of things makes then things tricky. You know, people
Yes, it was
become a little
permeable.
tricky.
So I don't know if that's a best practice. It's just that I'm too lazy to do all the paperwork.
I love it.
In co-housing, you don't get off so easy, Lynn. You
No, but we do hear that over time, people start out with a lot of rules just to kind of help kind of build the framework. But then over time, the rules become more lax as you learn to trust and you learn each other and you kind of normalize your behaviors. It's kind of like in a family, you know, you or any kind of, you know, relationship where you first start, you're kind of maybe more specific about a lot of things, but then over time you kind of start to
I think it's
read.
just the reverse. When you first start, you don't know what the hell you're doing. Over time, you say, oh, this is a problem. We have too much food because people don't show up. Okay, we have a rule. If you say you're going to come and you don't, you have to put $5 in the penalty box or whatever, whatever you try to correct the problem.
I would say
Well, I
that
think,
happens in co-housing too. Like
yeah.
you discover what rules you probably needed.
Yeah.
And then you make them and that's fine, you know. And then they don't work for you in 5 years and then you change them and that's okay too. Nothing's written in stone. Well, excellent. Well, you know, I think one of the things that I have really enjoyed hearing from you is this idea of being a leader but not taking charge, because we as a group have a lot of leaders in our group, and we have people who are leaders in different things at different times, but nobody is kind of like the king. Like it just doesn't stick around,
Right.
you know. It shifts and moves. And so hearing you talk about being a clear communicator and ensuring that people kind of know what the deal is, you know, that is the way to keep a group together, because then people, it's easy for them to join, easy for them to participate, and easy for them to leave if they need to.
And it's tapping into a need. I mean, co-housing taps into a need. When
You know,
I
there was.
retired 20 years ago, I was the first cohort of a major group of women who had had longtime professional careers. I mean, there have always been a few, but it was the, you know, so there was no role model for how do we retire? What do
Right.
women retire? We needed to figure it out.
Yeah. There was no defined off ramp, if you will, you know,
Exactly. And
who just kicked out.
I came out of COVID here and I said, okay, what do I need? I need two things. I need intellectual stimulation that is not on Zoom. I just can't spend any more time on
Yes,
Zoom.
I know.
And I need community. I need to know different people. And a friend of mine came to visit from New York and she was talking about this program that she was involved in New York. It's a group of retired peer learners based, that used to be at the New School, now it's at CCNY.
Oh, yeah.
Creates short courses and teach them to their other friends. I said, yes, why can't we do that in La Jolla? And so I just wrote up a proposal. I got somebody to say they were going to do it with me, but they didn't. I mean, mainly I did it. And we took it to the community center and we didn't hear from them for 5 months. And then somebody called and said, do you still want to do this? And I said, yeah. And they said, well, okay, if you do all the work. I said, okay. Let's make it as cheap as we possibly can, no rules. So we're into our fourth month. Every month we offer a short course taught by somebody in the community for free. and people show up, and I prefer wine and provide wine and cheese,
But you
and I
didn't think again.
think, I've met people, and equally valuable, my husband has made a friend, because sometimes I feel like I pimp for him to try and find people that he can like.
But
But it's true,
Susan,
I think when you
yeah.
meet over, I like this idea a lot of sharing skills. And this is something that I think we don't talk a lot about in causing, and definitely we don't talk a lot about it on this podcast yet because we aren't living together. But one thing that I really experienced is, like so and so is a compost expert, and I have a vague and passing interest in compost. So I am going to go and learn from this person about compost and then learn, is do I have actually a deeper interest in compost, or was it just a vague and passing interest? And it's really lovely to have that structure, that kind of intellectual connection with somebody else that then deepens the relationship because it gives you common ground that transcends age, it transcends, profession, all kinds of things. It's really lovely.
It's low level commitment, high level return. So the first month we did, a friend of mine has a master's in film, and she did iconic Western movies. And then the second month I badgered a young friend of mine into doing four sessions on demystifying artificial intelligence.
Oh, fun.
And then we had one on the culture and history of food. And starting next week, a woman who lives here, who's a Harvard professor of anesthesiology, started the first Harvard Pain Clinic, is going to do three lectures on pain. Mainly, they're not lectures. I like to think of them as conversations. And there's always food afterward. Some people don't stay, some people do. My hope is that over time, the peer learning collaborative will become a community. We're not there yet. And what, honestly, what makes it happen is I want it. That's it.
Okay. Yeah.
And
Well, I love that about you, Susan. I really am kind of getting a feel for why you are this legend here, because it seems like you're continually reinventing things. And coming up with new ideas. So COVID hit, that didn't derail you. You came right back after COVID and started coming up with new ideas. And you're just it sounds to me, you talked about you're not afraid to take charge, but I think you're also seems to be not afraid to try new things and to put yourself out there and to put out the invitation to people. And it the way that you invite people really draws people in to what you're offering. So it's a very heartwarming
well,
approach.
it sounds great when you do it that way. After I said yes, I would do this peer learning collaborative, I went, what the hell have I done?
Well,
Happen.
we all have those moments, right?
I don't know anybody. Where am I going to find people to do these
Yeah.
courses? And then I realized I'm 80. What will happen if I fail?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing. Nothing. I'll momentarily feel bad, but I'm not investing any money. I've got lots of time. It'll work or it won't work. And it's still, it'll work or it won't work. I don't know if it'll continue. It'll work or it won't work. In the meantime, and there are moments when I thought I should give up. That is where you have to sort of say, no, don't give up yet. Don't give up before you got started.
Yeah.
Just keep it. And I guess I don't think of myself as an optimist. I think of myself as a cheerful curmudgeon. But if you just keep banging away enough, happens, doesn't it?
Well, we hope so. Yes, this is our philosophy. Yes. Well,
Or
Susie,
one of the
I
things that might happen is you give up. But if you
yeah.
just keep banging away,
Yeah.
something happens.
Just have to be tenacious. I just want to thank you for joining us here today, and I want to extend to you a heartfelt welcome to join us for a dinner sometime when we get moved in Houston and you're back in town on a visit. We would love to host you and your husband. You can come over for dinner in the common house,
He
and
doesn't have to talk to anyone, I
he
promise.
doesn't have, we'll give
Promise
you a
him.
tour, and you can kind of soak in a little bit about co-housing in our community, kind of in action on a 24/7 basis, not just once a month.
No idea how much I would love that. Can I add one thing to this conversation?
Sure, you get to finish it up.
I wrote a book recently. I've written a lot of books, but my last book was called In the Country of Old. And it's for people who are old. You have to really be well into your 70s and preferably in your 80s for this book to speak to you. I told you I'm not very good at marketing. I think maybe I've sold 1,500 copies on Amazon. But here's the amazing thing. I have heard from at least 100 people about how much they share the feelings in the book. And I find that I suddenly have a national community, people who are interested in what I'm interested in. It has been so warming and gratifying. It's just a different kind of community that's just been so nice. So I just want to put it.
Well, Susan, wonderful. Since you are a self-declared terrible marketer, I am going to market on your behalf then.
Yes.
And I'm just going to say, go buy Susan's book because she has on her website links to all of the different books that she has written, but specifically this one. And especially if you're in that age group or you know someone in that age group or you're going to be in that age group, folks. I think
Thank you. It's on Amazon. It's $5.95. It won't break you. It's a short read. And then if you don't like it, by all means, write to me. My email's at the end and tell me why not. That's the best part.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Susan. We really appreciate it. And we're going to be talking about these ideas that you've shared with us as we plug away and continue to be persistent in growing our community. So
thank you so much for honoring me with your time.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks for stopping by today. We're so glad you clicked on our episode. For more information about our project, Cohousing Houston, go to www.cohousinghouston.com and subscribe to our newsletter. For general information about cohousing, we like cohousing.org. We're active on social media, so check out what's happening on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under Cohousing Houston.